You found it. The best place for live, local, conservative talk in the morning. The Commute with Carlson. Stimulating, entertaining, and making a difference. Here's John Carlson on Talk Radio 570 KVI.
But sometimes the news that's coming off is just, these are Washington fights. They're fabricated issues. They're phony scandals that are generated. It's not on the level.
Wow, not quite the soaring rhetoric of the 2008 or even the 2012 campaign. Welcome, everybody. It's Friday on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Been a great week. Thank you very much for being with me. And yes, I will be handing out four more brand new 3x5 foot commercial grade American flags, along with everything you need to appropriately and proudly display it. Going to be doing this all through until the 4th of July, along with our friends at Flags of Flying in Tacoma, just our way of thanking you for helping to make all of this happen. All right. If I could have John Fund on as a co-host for the first hour or two of the show, we would probably be able to deal with all the issues that are in front of us. John Fund from NationalReview.com. How are you, my friend?
Pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Like I said, if we could have you on for an hour, we still wouldn't get to all the things we could talk about here. I got to hear what you your take on Mississippi. You had a great piece in NationalReview.com about that. Want to talk to you about these Supreme Court decisions where, who says the Supreme Court, is hopelessly divided? They're unanimous in slapping down the Obama administration in a couple of areas. And, of course, your great new book, Obama's Enforcer, Eric Holder's Justice Department, the first book out about the controversial attorney general. Welcome to the Commute with Carlson this morning, John.
Thanks. Much to talk about, but frankly, more good news than bad news.
There is. Let us start with the good news. The Supreme Court, including three Obama appointees, unanimously ruling against the administration. And as you've been pointing out, this ain't the first time.
The untold story of the Obama's grab for executive power and executive overreach and against the civil liberties of Americans, the untold story is the last 2 years, the Supreme Court has 13 times slapped down the Obama administration, 9-0, including his own former Solicitor General from the Justice Department, Elena Kagan, and they have said, no way, no how, not going there, buddy.
And what is remarkable about this is when you have ardently liberal justices like Sonia Sotomayor, like Elena Kagan, coming down against the administration time after time, it shows what is the basic premise of your book on Eric Holder, which is it's not about law and justice and the Constitution in this administration. It's about wanting a desired political income and crafting an interpretation of the law that gets you there, regardless of what it means to the Constitution.
Well, this really does have an impact on your listeners, because look at this week. This week, the Obama administration was claiming that they could search your cell phone without a search warrant. Court said 9-0, no way. Last year, the administration went into the Supreme Court and they said, we want to have the right to put a GPS tracking device on your car without a search warrant, without a court order, without any evidence of a crime being committed. The Supreme Court said, you got to be kidding.
Right. And of course, a pair of other rulings. They overreached on recess appointments.
Abortion safeties, buffer zones.
The safety zones
laws
in Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm. That said, you could not go within 35 feet of a place where abortions were being held. Outrageous restrictions on liberty. And the court, 9-0. You're going too far. When will you get the message?
Now, is this an indication to you that maybe, just maybe, the court, even its liberal wing, might be inching toward the center? Or is it a sign that the Obama administration is just so far over the line that even liberals can't countenance it?
oh, the court is still very bitterly divided. For example, I think you're going to get the Hobby Lobby contraceptive case next Monday, and that's going to be a close vote. But whenever the Obama administration tries to act like Richard Nixon and says, you know, we are all powerful, we are a king, the court is going to look at that and say, you know, we have three branches of government, and we've got a say in that.
Do you believe, as Charles Krauthammer said last night, John Fund, that had Barack Obama been a Republican, he likely would have been impeached by Congress already?
Well, depending on which party controlled Congress. Remember, impeachment is a political act. It's mm-hmm. not a legal act. Somebody can do awful things in office, but, you know, if you don't have the votes to impeach and convict him, you probably don't want to do that because it sucks all the oxygen out of the room. The American people hate conflict, and we all saw that they punished the Republicans when they properly impeached Bill Clinton back in 1998. So the answer would depend on the political constellation of forces. However, you know, just the fact that Barack Obama was the first African-American president basically gave him immunity from impeachment the day he took office.
Right. And in his second term, he doesn't much care about constitutional nuance and subtlety either.
We don't need no stinking laws, to quote Treasure of the Sierra Madre.
Listen, I want to talk to you about your book just out, Obama's Enforcer, Eric Holder's Justice Department. Before we get there, you got a great piece in National Review Online about the ramifications of the Mississippi election. Again, you had poor Thad Cochran, one term too many, insisted on staying around again, gets a spirited challenge from a state legislator with a distinguished past as a radio talk show host, and he is carried into extra innings, into a runoff, and he wins the race, but the campaign tactics employed on his behalf, which were to reach out to Democrats and play the race card, are leaving a really ugly aftertaste.
I don't know who won the election in Mississippi, but I do know that not only were there dirty tactics, sleazy if not illegal, there was also fraud. I'm getting lots of evidence that there may have been thousands of people who voted in the Democratic primary 3 weeks ago did vote in this Republican runoff against the law, absentee ballot fraud, people voting multiple times.
Well, that's easy to check.
Well, we need an investigation. And uh-huh. frankly, the political establishment in Mississippi doesn't want it. But frankly, the voters of Mississippi should demand it. And so should the Republicans around the country.
Absolutely.
Because these are tactics that we always decry if Democrats do them, but if our own party does them, we can't remain silent because then we become just like them.
Well, yeah, I mean, if the race card were played for a white candidate, the way, if white people were appealed to using the race card, the way African-American voters were in Mississippi to vote for Thad Cochran, this would be a national scandal. It wouldn't be an intra-party fight. It would be a national outrage, front page above the full New York Times.
Oh, it's the slander of an entire movement. I mean, putting out flyers saying the Tea Party wants to prevent you from voting, you know, show them. I mean, there was no evidence the Tea Party wanted to prevent people from voting. The Tea Party is all about the Constitution. The whole Tea Party is all about, what does the acronym stand for? Tea, taxed enough already.
So let me ask you, John, what do you think the political fallout is going to be from Mississippi, the Mississippi primary, both within that state and Republican primaries throughout the rest of the country and you know, turnout in November?
I think in the end, it probably won't affect turnout in November because, you know, antipathy towards Barack Obama's administration is so powerful among all wings of the Republican Party. But in the future, I mean, this is a potential civil war going on here. This is an establishment that has shown that whenever it loses, it takes away its marbles, And whether it's Lisa Murkowski in Alaska mounting a write-in campaign when she loses the Republican primary 2 years ago, or Thad Cochran basically playing the race card in order to keep his seat at age 76, the establishment, will do anything to stay in power. Whereas the Tea Party, whenever it loses, it is told, you know, you should suck it up, you know, go home, and in November come out like a loyal Republican and just vote for whoever won the primary by means fair or foul.
All right, John, I want to spend a few more moments talking about your book just out, Obama's Enforcer, Eric Holder's Justice Department. First book out, I think, about Eric Holder, who's been a controversial figure even before he joined the Obama administration.
Oh, in the Clinton administration, he was the Deputy Attorney General, Deputy to Janet Reno. He was put in that job 20 years ago to make sure there were no further special prosecutors appointed. You know, Janet Reno had done her job and she had followed the law and appointed special prosecutors. Eric Holder was there to make sure that didn't happen again, and sure enough, it didn't. And then Eric Holder, 20 years ago, was instrumental in the Mark Rich pardon, which was the first pardon ever granted to an international fugitive from justice.
That was the last minute series of pardons as Bill Clinton was heading out the door.
And another one of those pardons was of 16 Puerto Rican terrorists who had not requested any kind of clemency or pardon, but Hillary Clinton was running for the Senate in New York. Puerto Rican vote is important in New York, and voila, somehow 16 Puerto Rican terrorists were released, even though they hadn't requested a release.
What did you learn about Eric Holder that you didn't know when you started this book?
The extent to which he has changed. He started out in the corruption division of the Justice Department, going after public officials who had violated the trust of the people who hired them, and he gradually became a Democratic Party apparatchik. It's a sad case of someone going native, going Washington in a big way. Now he's basically Obama's heat shield. He says what Obama won't. He acts the way Obama doesn't want to on issues of race. And frankly, the two are inseparable. And it's sort of, you know, good cop, bad cop. And guess who plays the bad cop?
But they're, of course, like any good cop, bad cop, they're both aiming toward the same thing.
He
will also be the last guy out of this administration.
If he were to leave office before this term is up, he would have a new occupation, permanent witness. He would have to answer all those subpoenas and depositions and requests for documents that he can safely avoid as Attorney General. Now, to the extent that, you know, by refusing to turn over documents for the Fast and Furious gun running scandal, Congress, the House of Representatives, actually held him in contempt. He ignored that contempt citation.
So let me ask you whether you think there will be a special prosecutor to look into Lois Lerner, the missing emails, the IRS scandal. How much longer can they go without a special prosecutor?
How many days are there left to the administration? They will, of course, never have a special prosecutor because they can't control what a special prosecutor might find. I think the way to get to the bottom of the IRS scandal is simple. You'd get a list of the top 50 or so IRS employees, mid-level, low-level, who had anything to do with Lois Lerner's lost emails. Mm-hmm. You haul them in front of Congress, put them on television, force them to raise their arm and testify under oath as to what happened. And, you know, if you take 50 people, three or four are going to be close to retirement. They don't care. Three or four are going to have spouses who say, you dare not lie. Three or four are going to say, I dare not lie because it's against my conscience. You'll get the truth.
John Fund, the author of a great new book just out, Obama's Enforcer, Eric Holder's Justice Department. John, what a window on how bare-knuckled Chicago-style politics is when brought to the Justice Department.
Well, we want a Justice Department that enforces the law. We don't want a Justice Department that punishes its enemies and rewards its friends. That's what we have now.
I appreciate you taking the time to be here, John. Covered a lot of ground in a short period of time. Enjoy the weekend, all right?
You too. Thanks much.
You got it.
Obama's Enforcer.
Yeah, Obama's Enforcer, Eric Holder's Justice Department, just out in bookstores and Amazon.com. Right now. Thanks very much, John. It is 19 minutes after 5 o'clock in the morning. So great to have you with me. When we come back, There were 8 police cars. 8 police cars outside the 7-Eleven half a block from our station when I happened to be rolling up to grab a cup of coffee. Tell you why those cop cars were there right after this.
Somebody's got to stand up for what's right. This is Talk Radio 570 KVI.
It's 23 minutes after 5 o'clock in the morning, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. And yes, in less than half an hour, I will be giving out a gorgeous 3x5 foot American flag just in time for the 4th of July and everything you need to appropriately and proudly display it. That's going to come again in less than half an hour, actually less than 25 minutes here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. All right, so I'm rolling toward work and I see a police car in front of the 7-Eleven. Oh, wait, no, there's 2 police cars. Whoa, wait a minute. There's 2 more in the parking lot behind the police cars on the street. And then as I pull up and I look down the street, there's 2, 3, 4 other police cars. 8 police cars in all in front of the 7-Eleven, which is just a couple hundred feet from our building. And it's where I roll in every once in a while to get my morning coffee, which is what I was planning to do today. So I pull into the parking lot and I'm thinking, all right, with this many police cars, there's only 3 possibilities. Number 1, armed robbery of the 7-Eleven. Number 2, a dead body, you know, in the dumpster behind the store, something like that. And they need to have a lot of law enforcement there. Number 3, violent crime in progress involving multiple offenders, hence the need for a lot of manpower. So I get there, pull in, and I get out of the car, talk to Al, the really great Indian who is the manager, morning manager. And I said, what's up? And I see the police detaining this very loud, abrasive, abusive guy. But, I mean, they got a handle on him. He's not even struggling. He knows that he's, you know, surrounded and he's going to be doing what the officers want one way or the other. And this guy had, it turns out, none of those things. There was no dead body. There was no armed robbery. There was no violent crime in progress. It was just this really loud, obnoxious, mean, old drunk. And he had been making trouble in the 7-Eleven, and they said, get out of here. You know you're not supposed to be in here. He's well known around the neighborhood, and he, you know, drops the F word and says, you effing Indian, you get out of here, and all that stuff. And but they didn't call the police this time. Somebody else called the police, and the police just caught up with the guy when he circled back around to the parking lot of the 7-Eleven. And I'm thinking, why on earth are there 8 police cars? And then here comes an 8 car. And the only rational explanation is, look at the political climate that the Seattle police are operating under, where they're constantly accused of abusing their discretion, where they're constantly accused of using excessive force. So here you have that this guy happens to be African-American. He's probably in his, late 40s, early 50s. You can't really tell with, you know, street people. But it's just, you know, one guy who's being loud and obnoxious. And in previous years, it would have been a police car, maybe 2, because you need backup. But now here's 8 police cars, and the officers, you know, reinforcing each other, they're blocking a lane of traffic, and they eventually bring in the 8 car and get this guy strapped to a gurney, and he's no longer abusive. He's almost like, you know, singing and just, you know, in his own world. And I'm thinking, wow, this is what the political climate in Seattle has delivered. That, you know, dealing with an obnoxious drunk now requires not one, not two, not even half a dozen, but eight police vehicles. And it was obvious the officers need to reinforce each other. They need numerous witnesses. They overwhelming manpower to make sure that other characters don't start acting up and creating trouble. And it goes, you know, once again to, you know, the police officers in Seattle. We got this new police chief, and we'll see how she deals with the rank and file on the street. But the reality of their jobs right now just doesn't correspond to reality on the street. What they are told, how they are told to do their job, does not correspond to keeping law and order on the street. That's what this all gets down to. What they would do to maintain law and order is not what they're allowed to do. And so what you have is this excessive display of police power to try and keep situations from growing out of hand, especially when they involve people of color. Even in this case, just, you know, a loud, mentally disturbed drunk who's, you know, well known for just being a belligerent jerk around the neighborhood. So, you know, my hat goes off. I wanted to talk to the officers, but they were all engaged and focused on this guy. And so I just kind of stood and watched for a couple of minutes and then headed out. You know, I understand what this lawsuit's all about. Where these police officers, over 100 police officers have sued, saying that they're not being permitted to do their job as they know that job needs to be done. And I hope that they keep this lawsuit alive, that they don't drop it as a goodwill gesture to the new chief, because it doesn't matter who the people are calling the shots. It matters what the rules are, and the rules the police are being forced to operate under are wrong.